This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Friday, August 6, 2021. Today will be better than yesterday. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Only, working from my home studio in New York. It feels like, Taylor, every day we get more news about positive cases with the Yankees. It's incredible. Like, every day another player goes down.
Things have really shifted here, because before we were talking about injuries every day. I guess, thankfully, these aren't season-ending injuries. It's just COVID. But is that a weird thing to say in 2021?
Yeah,
I feel very anxious about it.
It's weird for sure. And if you're Aaron Boone, it's got to be you just cringe every day when your phone rings and it's probably some person on your athletic training staff saying, yep, another guy went down. Yesterday, it was Gary Sanchez, the latest Yankees player to test positive. This is after earlier in the week, Jordan Montgomery, Gerrit Cole tested positive. You know what the crazy thing is? The Yankees just keep on winning. They faced the Mariners yesterday. It was tied 2-2, top of the seventh inning, and this is what happened.
Here's a pitch swung on, driven deep to right. Got some carry. Gone! A home run, Jared Kelnick. And the Mariners have a 3-2 lead.
That was Dave Sims, 710 ESPN Seattle. So the Mariners had a 3-2 lead. In the bottom of the seventh inning, Joey Gallo, a newcomer acquired from the Texas Rangers last week, came to the plate with two runners on base.
High fly ball down the line. Haniger on the track at the wall. See ya! Joey Gallo, signature Yankee moment. A three-run home run. His first blast as a Yankee. And it gives them a 5-3 lead.
Michael K on the Yes Network, and I saw a lot of response on Twitter, Taylor, that people were like, yeah, Yankee Stadium home run. And I was thinking, yep, that's true. But that's what Joey Gallo brings to Yankee Stadium.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's why they got him. Who cares?
All right. Earlier in the day, the Red Sox continued to lose. They faced the Tigers and they got whipped.
Fly ball deep to center field off the bat of Reyes. That's going to split the outfielders all the way to the deepest part of the ballpark in right center. Cabrera's in. Behind him, Candelario. Reyes to third with his second triple of the day. Goes in standing up. Two-run triple, 6-0 Tigers in the fifth.
Dan Dickerson, 97.1 the ticket. Detroit wins that game 8-1. So the Yankees win. The Red Sox lose. What about the Blue Jays? Bo Bichette came through in the bottom of the fourth.
The 2-0. Swinging a high fly ball. Deep left field. And you can't forget it. Into the 200 level for Bo Bichette.
That from Sportsnet 590, the Fan. The Blue Jays shut out the Indians 3-0. In just a couple weeks, the Yankees have cut the deficit behind the Red Sox from 9 games to 4, and the Blue Jays now are only 5 games out. Some other news and notes. Los Angeles Dodger pitcher Trevor Bauer had his administrative leave extended another week through August 13th. He has a hearing scheduled August 16th through 19th. So that's probably not the last time that he's going to have that administrative leave extended. As we've said and talked about on the podcast, seems very unlikely that Bauer would ever have an opportunity to pitch for the Dodgers again, because the baseball calendar is running out on him. A betting site next to Wrigley Field was approved. The Commission on Chicago Landmarks unanimously voted Thursday to approve the Cubs' plans to build a two-story sportsbook adjacent to the ballpark. The Marlins played the Mets. The Mets trying to hang on to first place in the National League East, and it's not going so well.
Brinson swings and cracks one. Right center field. Down for an extra base hit. Scoring is Chisholm. Here comes Alfaro. Hillman's going to wave him around. Here comes a throw to the plate. A catch. And he's safe at the plate. McCann can't hang on.
That, I think, was the phone ringing for help for the Mets, because they keep losing. They lose the Marlins yesterday 4-2. So the Mets lose. The Braves face the Cardinals, and they benefited from a lot of St. Louis wildness.
Good eye. It's low. And Alex Reyes has just walked in the go-ahead run. 3-0, bases loaded in a 5-4 game and a four-pitch walk to vote.
3-2.
The fourth consecutive walk by Reyes.
You got to go get him, Kevin.
Duvall was hit by a pitch, and then walk after walk after walk after walk. Another bases loaded walk.
Because you're mine.
I love that. I love the montage with little Johnny Cash. What'd you think, Taylor?
Yeah, very nicely done by our TV folks. I wish I could take credit for it, but that was good stuff.
Yeah, that from ESPN TV. The Braves win 8-4. The Phillies had a wild game last night. Bryce Harper, who's emerged as an MVP candidate in the National League, had a nice moment.
Pitch swung on, hit high and deep. Center field straight away. Robles going back. He's looking up, and that ball is going to be gone. It clears dead center field onto the batter's eye here at Nationals Park. It's home run number 250 in the career of Bryce Harper.
That was Scott Fransky, Sports Radio 94 WIP. Now, the Phillies, despite that home run, trailed 5-4 in the top of the ninth inning. JT Realmuto changed that.
Finnegan ready. He kicks the 3-2 pitch. Swing and a drive right center field. That's going to get down for a base hit. The game is tied. JT around first, headed for second. He's tied us up with a double with two strikes and two outs here in the top of the ninth. It's a 5-5 game.
Boom! What a weight off the bat.
Yeah, went from 5-3 to 5-5 with that hit. Reese Hoskins followed.
The 1-1, swing and a drive, left center field. It's well hit. Yadiel Hernandez won't get it. It's going to the wall. One run will score. Harper flying around third. He will score, and Reese Hoskins has come through. A two-run double and a four-run ninth inning. The Phillies lead it 7-5.
And they would win 7-5, which is why overnight I was getting notes from Paul Imbecides, the Phillies fan, talking about how we told our listeners that the Phillies would make a run in the second half. What he really meant to say was he told listeners that the Phillies would make a second half run, Taylor. They're just a half game out of first place. The Braves just a game and a half out of first place. Is it time to panic for the Mets, Taylor?
Oh, my God. It's absolutely time to panic for the Mets. I mean, the Phillies are hot right now. The Mets floundering. This is goat rodeo division here, Buster. This is what you get.
And we're going to be talking with Carl Ravitch and Eduardo Perez about all that. News out of Cleveland, the team soon to be known as the Guardian has a new 15-year lease agreement, and there is a $435 million renovation plan in place as well. Sad news about Houston Astros icon J.R. Richard, passed away yesterday at age 71. I'm going to be talking with Eduardo about him. He was an absolute monster pitcher that because of something that happened during his career doesn't get the accolades that he should. Before we get to Carl and to Eduardo and to Todd, I want to tell you about Sunday Night Baseball this week. It's on ABC. You know, Sunday Night Baseball has always been on ESPN, but this weekend on ABC, Al Michaels will be calling in. Looks like we're going to get Tim Anderson of the White Sox mic'd up. It's going to be in Wrigley Field, White Sox versus Cubs. And I'm really curious to see how many White Sox fans are going to be taken over the ballpark on the north side. What do you got, Taylor?
So you can also listen to that Sunday Night Baseball game on ESPN Radio. Tune-in time is 6 p.m. Eastern. Saturday, excellent game on ESPN Radio as well. You've got Giants at Brewers at 6:30. We've also got, of course, a handful of, more than a handful of ESPN podcast offerings, you know, while you're fiddling around the house, getting ready to have friends and family over. Just to name a few, obviously, we've got Fantasy Focus Baseball, but Fantasy Focus Football is back. It's on daily. You can watch that on ESPN Plus. Black History Always is our newest podcast. You've got DC and RC for our UFC show. You got Greeny, you can listen to a podcast as a podcast. Whole raft of options. You can search, follow, rate, and review any of those shows wherever you listen to your podcast. Two other things to note here. And if you didn't know already, ESPN Plus is great. I live in Connecticut. DC United was on Wednesday night. Great to be able to watch it. Streaming from my PlayStation 5. That's MLS for all you seam heads out there. What a treat that was. So ESPN, they've got live sporting events, obviously, the epic documentary series, The Last Dance. And it, of course, it has the whole 30 for 30 library, which includes the newest entry, Breakaway, which we've talked about on the show this week. You can sign up now and watch it all at ESPNplus.com.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
All aboard. It's the Rabby Train with Carl Ravitch.
Rabby Train operated by Carl Ravitch. Rabby, where's the Rabby Train going to in the next week or so?
Rabby Train has spent some time with the St. Louis Cardinals, which hasn't been a great deal of fun, kind of a bumpy ride given their bullpen. Rabby Train starts to get into Little League, believe it or not, on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. One major league game on Wednesday. In fact, at Williamsport, we're going to call the Little League Classic Angels Indians on ESPN Radio. So the Rabby Train's all over the place, but looking to relocate to Williamsport, Pennsylvania for a week and a half starting next week.
You and I are really lucky in that we get to see all these cool things. You know, you did the College World Series. You're going to be doing the Little League World Series. As you laid out the major league games that you're calling. I got to say, I'm kind of bitter that we're not doing this game in Iowa, you know, the Field of Dreams game. And I guess because I wanted to, like, I felt like I was going to be the first sideline reporter to roll into some coverage on driving a freaking John Deere.
And by the way, nobody more equipped than you to do that. You could have broken down cornfields as well as any human being ever did, perhaps find a cow out there too. Yeah, I mean, look, that'll be a neat environment for sure. It's a very good game too, which is the bonus of it. You get two teams that are, you know, fighting for a playoff spot in the Yankees and one that's got a chance to win a World Series. It's in the White Sox. It's a very good game, which I hear you. I'd like to do that, but you end up not being able to do everything.
Right, exactly. I am curious about the ground rules. I haven't seen any images of the fencing and what happens when the ball rolls into the corn, right?
The field is beautiful. I mean, look, and the ball won't roll into the corn. It can be hit into the corn, but it can't roll into the corn, unfortunately.
Anyway. All right. So I've told this story before. Tom Keegan, longtime columnist for the New York Post, has moved on since then. But one of my favorite columns that he would write every year to stir the pot of New York was, "It's time to panic." And right, sometimes right. It was completely inappropriate, and it wasn't really, it was too early to panic, like when he would write that column in April or May. But I do feel like we're at a stage now where we can begin to apply that concept to some teams in Major League Baseball. Let's start with the Boston Red Sox. In less than 2 weeks, they've seen their advantage over the Yankees go from 9 games to 4 games. Their advantage over the Blue Jays now down to 5 games. They go into Detroit, they lose a series to, you know, let's face it, they're not one of the worst teams in baseball, but the Tigers are certainly not one of the better teams in baseball. That's a series you would expect to win, and instead they got waxed, Carl.
Yeah. The concern meter in the Northeast is very high. It is very high in Boston, and unfortunately or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, they have a guy coming back, and Chris Sale, who has become a wild X factor in this whole thing. Their run differential is plus 42. The Rays are over 100. The Blue Jays have the highest run differential in the East and second highest in the league. There are teams that they're going to face who all the metrics suggest are better. And I think we have seen recently, whether it's Perez, Eduardo Rodriguez continues to be inconsistent. Nick Pivetta has been good, but there's a bunch of skepticism around their pitching. And Sale coming back may be the biggest acquisition that a team makes, but how much can you expect from somebody who's used to huge workloads, who you would hope in a healthy season will give you 7 or 8 innings and strike out 10 plus? That's probably not going to happen and is unfair expectations. So, to me, the Red Sox pitching is is of great concern. And you look at a kid like Alec Manoah, who I think is going to face Eovaldi. You know, really good stuff. There's a lot of reasons to like all three of the teams in that division, Tampa Bay, New York, and Toronto, currently as much as you do Boston, if not more so. I don't think they overachieved. I think they are a really, really good team, but I do wonder about their starting pitching relative to Tampa Bay's, relative to Toronto's, and relative to the Yankees, who haven't had great starting pitching. There's nothing about their starting pitching that makes you think they go into a game or a series, really, and they have an advantage. Chris Sale has the ability to change that.
I agree completely with how you cast that. I think that's perfectly. But what's interesting to me is a month ago, I think we, and maybe you can disagree with me if you do. A month ago, I think we looked at Chris Sale as being the cherry on top for a first place team. Like, wow, absolutely, the Red Sox are playing well. And guess what? On top of all that, they get Chris Sale back. Now, instead of being the cherry on top, he's got to be one of the girders. Like, he's got to be one of the big pieces. And would you agree?
Oh, 100%. I would not disagree. But at that point, Garrett Richards was pitching really well. Nick Pivetta was pitching really well. Eovaldi was consistently good. Eduardo Rodriguez was sort of the, gosh, if he can find it, they're going to be great. And unfortunately with Eduardo, there are more nights than less when he goes to the mound and you kind of watch this guy that just appears to be working, you know, on an RPM of 33 as opposed to 78. If we want to date ourselves with records, it just goes slowly. And that's been an issue. And again, I do think that the trade deadline is sort of a tap on the shoulder constantly when you find your team in this situation. Why didn't we do more? Why didn't they go out and get a reliever? Why didn't they invest in a starting pitcher? Here are some things that were shiny, and now that it's rained on them a little bit, there's some rust that's starting to show, as opposed to, hell, the good news is they went out and got, you know, starting pitcher A, B, or C that the other teams were proactive, and they did. Why didn't our team do that?
Yeah, we talked about Anthony Rizzo before the trade deadline, how perfect it would have been for the Red Sox team. As Hembo sent me a note this morning, 30th in defensive efficiency. And now, as you bring back Kyle Schwarber, whenever he comes back, he's only going to add to the defensive problems, because whatever choice Alex Cora makes, he's going to have to diminish the defense. Tell me if you agree with this, you know, wildly inappropriate analogy. I think of the Red Sox as, you know, Captain Alex Cora returned and he led his troops in the storming of a fort, and they got over the walls, and then they turn around looking for the reinforcements and nobody's coming. That there has to be some frustration in that, talking about the deadline.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. That was my point about you do sort of have this constant tap on the shoulder when you're watching SportsCenter and Baseball Tonight, or reading a column, or, you know, watching on Instagram or wherever you may consume it, that Joey Gallo just did a 3-run homer. Anthony Rizzo starts like a house of fire. The Tampa Bay Rays show no signs of slowing down. Here are the Yankees, who go 8-2 in their last 10 and have won 3 in a row, just like the Blue Jays. And as opposed to you look for reinforcements, I think what you find is you get into that castle and you realize, wow, we were able to get over that wall. And now that we're in the castle, behind every one of those doors is a new enemy, meaning it's not just one team. It's now a three-headed monster that we are dealing with. And you go into Toronto with a team that scores all the runs that they do, with a pitching staff that hasn't been shut down, and you can't be feeling really good about it. That's for sure. You can't be feeling good about facing Tampa Bay. You can't be feeling good about the Yankees. And yes, I'd say 3 weeks, a month ago, you would feel good about facing all those teams. And it may be momentum, it may change, but there's not a great deal let's just say, hard fact to root that in. There's just not.
All right, panic meter, scale of 1 to 10, New York Mets.
You know, I'll be honest with you, it's weird because the you know, the Red Sox lead the American League wildcard race. And while the Mets only lead their division by a half game and the Braves are right there, it sank me last year. It is probably going to sink me again this year. My panic meter on the Mets is less than it is on the Red Sox. And that's maybe weird because of these teams that are all there. And again, like Sale, I mean, DeGrom is a wild X factor. I still harp on, and I don't know why, and clearly I'm being slapped upside the head with the numbers that show an offense that has Nimmo at the top and Alonso in the middle, and when he comes back, Lindor and Baez and Dom Smith, like James McCann's doing well. Like they're all good to above average offensive players, at least the ones I mentioned. You're going to get Lindor back, and hopefully you get DeGrom back. I think in the division where the Phillies are the team I would be skeptical of, even though they're playing better, and the Braves, in spite of in spite of the additions, it'd be fascinating to see their pitching. I think the Mets are the best team in that division, and I know I'm probably in the minority. I think all equal, they're the best team in that division. Red Sox, all equal, I think Tampa Bay is better, and I think Toronto and New York are closer to Boston, in my opinion, than the Phillies and Braves are to the Mets. And that's with everything going well for Boston and New York.
You're right. The Mets are going to be getting Lindor back soon. That certainly is going to help. And another wild card, I think, for the Mets, Carl, is Michael Conforto. Like, you keep waiting for the lights to go on.
I agree. Yep. You're 100% right. And look, that is a track record I think you trust. He's a really good hitter. He needs to have a good season. I don't know if he's pressing because of his contract situation. But again, there's a lot of talent there. And this is the skeptic scale on me. Like Michael Conforto, or just to use the comparison that we were using today, Garrett Richards or Nick Pivetta. I trust Michael Conforto more than those names that I just mentioned, in the sense of that if you're looking panic meter and skeptic scale, I think the Mets are good. Now, the Mets have been infuriatingly frustrating because their bullpen's blown games. Their offense just has not consistently produced it. It's a very strange dynamic when they have a minus 11 run differential and the Braves are plus 61. That should not be given the players they have. And again, I know Mets fans, they're always in touch with me saying our offense stinks. We don't hit. There's no clutch. Any one of these genes that don't exist. And Lindor's been a major disappointment. But again, he hasn't played on the same field with Baez. Who knows if that lights a fire underneath him. I think they're better equipped. I will say, Buster, the moves that Alex Anthopoulos made with the Braves, and we just did that game in that series. Adam Duvall comes up with a big home run. Jorge Soler, he looks like a beast of a number two or three hitter. So, and again, like you said, you look over your shoulder after the trade deadline, and even in Atlanta where they lose the best player in the league, you're like, oh my God, we supplemented the best player with four guys who, if you take the sum of the four, you get close to some of the things that Ronald Acuna could do. You're not there. But we really tried, and we may have nailed this in the names and the players that we got. Duvall made a great catch the other night.
You know what I absolutely love about what the Braves did, Carl, is that in this last decade when we've talked so much about tanking, the Atlanta Braves ran out the ground ball, right? At the time Alex Anthopoulos began to make a lot of these deals, the Jock Peterson deal that he made at the All-Star break, and then adding the outfielders before the deadline. Look, he sees the numbers we do. He knew that they were behind. He probably knows in his heart that, you know, the odds are against the Braves figuring this out without the, you know, Ronald Acuna Jr., but he freaking ran out the ground ball. Like, he tried. I love that. And I know, you know, there's some criticism among Braves fans of, the Atlanta front office, the moves they make. A lot of that is shaped by the budget that the owners give to the front offices. To me, he has done absolutely everything possible to try to be those reinforcement. We talked about the Red Sox and, looking behind you and not seeing reinforcements. Alex has done everything he can just to make the team a little bit better with each of these small deals.
Look, if you are an Atlanta Braves fan and you want to be critical of a front office and you're going to look at your own and be critical, go try to be a Cardinals fan today. Tell me which front office did better. Go ahead. You tell me and you're going to be critical of yours. Please. That makes no sense. You have to love what he did. They're getting Anderson back. They're getting Noah back. There are reasons to think if we can get into the tournament, the postseason, we have a fighter's chance without question. We have a fighter's chance. So yeah, they're a really good team. They had lost 9 straight games in which they could have been 500. They won the game that we did Wednesday. They won last night with a comeback against the horrifying bullpen that is the Cardinals. So they've won 2, like they've gotten over that hurdle. Let's do this again next Friday and see where they are in the standings. I think it'll be very, very interesting.
Last one before you go, obviously with DeGrom out, the National League Cy Young Award is completely wide open in that race. Sort of. I was looking at the numbers this morning, Carl, on FanGraphs, and you know, look, WAR is not everyone's favorite number, but if you look at the way F-WAR is stacked up, it's not even close, okay? Walker Buehler is certainly in the conversation at 2.16 ERA. He's been spectacular in the second half. Brandon Woodruff is in the conversation. Kevin Gausman in the conversation. But, Carl, according to FanGraphs, Zach Wheeler is running away with F-WAR in terms of leadership. He is at 5.1. The next closest pitcher across the entire major league spectrum is Nathan Eovaldi at 3.9. He's tied with Woodruff at 3.9. So Zach Wheeler, 2.57 ERA, 2.49 FIP, 2.81 xFIP, 10.4 strikeouts per 9 innings, which is a big number for sure. He has been spectacular, and I think especially if the Phillies continue to be in this playoff race and maybe reach the postseason – for the first time in a decade, I think he's going to win it. What do you think?
You know, I think he is the current front runner. The Giants are the team, and obviously the Dodgers have Cy Young guys on that staff. But the Giants are obviously the team with the best record. So you look to that team and you wonder, okay, well, who's the Cy Young winner? And there isn't one. They've all been good. Gausman has been good. He's not putting up the numbers that Wheeler is. DeSclafani, Cueto, all of their pitchers, like their team, they've been really good. But if Zach Wheeler is the leading candidate for Cy Young, which he currently is, you could make the case Bryce Harper is the MVP front runner, and he's on the same team that Zach Wheeler is. And there's just nothing about – there's no Shohei Ohtani in the National League right now. And all the usual suspects are either hurt or not having the years you would expect. I mean, if you think about it, Acuna, a guy like Alonso, certainly Lindor on that team this year. Seager's been hurt for the Dodgers. All of the usual suspects. And Harper was always a usual suspect, but he hasn't been recently. And when I made this comment the other night, there's just nothing eye-popping about him, and yet he's having one of his best seasons since the great 2015 year. He's just not hitting 32 homers like Ohtani is or the league leaders. He's not driving in a ton of runs, but good golly, he's doing everything you want. So, yeah, right now the Phillies have 2 leading candidates for both the Cy Young and MVP race in Wheeler and Harper. And again, I'm sitting here telling you I think the Mets win the division. So that just shows where I need to go put my head.
All right, Carl. Good to talk with you. I will see you soon.
Enjoy the week. See you, Buster.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Todd Radom is the chief executive of our weekly quiz. He's a graphic artist whose work can be seen on ball fields all across America, all around the world. Or you can go to his website, toddradom.com. Todd, it's well established in the podcast that you are an ardent Red Sox fan. The question of the podcast today seems to be for the Mets, And for your Red Sox, is it time to panic? Tell me about your Red Sox.
I don't know, Buster. It certainly has not been an enjoyable thing to have watched as of late. And I was a little bit nervous in the, particularly in the first half of the season, Red Sox winning a lot of 1-0 games or 1-run games, excuse me, which, as you and I both know, it's not always sustainable. So I don't know if I'm quite panicking yet. We got a ways to go, but I'm not as optimistic as I might have been when you and I had lunch in Denver.
You know what's interesting about the Red Sox season? You think about the two surprise teams in the American League and National League, okay? If the Giants, let's say they wind up, you know, finishing in a wild card spot and they get knocked out in the first game or knocked out in the wild card game, I think generally speaking, Giants fans would go, you know what? Good season. It was a good year of progress. If the Red Sox don't make the playoffs, or even if they get knocked out in the wild card game, I don't feel like Red Sox fans are going to feel that way. Tell me if I'm wrong.
I think you're right, and I think that the weight of history looms large always, even if you're too young to have experienced it firsthand. I think in the case of the Giants, you're right. It's like they're playing with house money, and the Red Sox, after a miserable abbreviated year last year. Obviously, not a lot of people had him winning the World Series, but things were looking pretty good until the wheels kind of fell off the bus. So, fan bases and expectations of fan bases and that accumulated weight, it's sometimes a part of the dynamic.
Now, before we get to this week's quiz, let's do this week's forgotten franchise, a team from the 19th century. What do you got?
All right, Buster. This week, we are going to take a look at the Syracuse Stars, a team that played for part of one season in the National League. This was in 1879. Syracuse was admitted to the NL on December 4th, 1878, despite the fact that it didn't meet league rules barring cities with populations of less than 75,000 citizens. The Stars got the nod, however, due to the fact that they were an established club, having played the season prior as members of the International Association. The league also cited the team's fiscally sound and honest ownership group. Interestingly, Buster, Syracuse beat out the Tecumseh Club of London, Ontario, which if they had made it, they would have become Canada's first MLB franchise. Syracuse's first and only NL opener took place at Newell Park, a half mile west of where the Carrier Dome now stands, on May 28th, 1879, and it was witnessed by a small crowd of 500 fans who were put off by the high price of admission, 50 cents, which was the NL's uniform ticket price. The Stars won that day, whitewashing Cleveland by a score of 4-0, and the Salt City's brief flirtation with big league baseball was off and running. The Stars' home field was described as, quote, miserable, and the team was not much better. They embarked upon a 9-game losing streak in mid-June, and attendance plummeted. Perhaps the club's signature moment came on July 26th, when Syracuse native Harry McCormick, the Stars' starting pitcher, hit a first-inning homer to beat Boston 1-0, the first time a big league pitcher won a 1-0 game with his own home run. In deep, deep fiscal trouble, Syracuse club officials petitioned the league to lower that 50-cent admission charge, but they were denied. The Stars officially disbanded, Buster, on September 10th, finishing up with a record of 22 wins and 48 losses and one tie, $2,500 in debt, and 14 games short of completing what would be their only season. The following day, the Rochester Democrat and Chronicle reported the news with but a single tiny line of type, and I quote, "The Syracuse Stars have climbed the golden stairs." The Stars burned out after less than a year in the majors, but they are, Buster, this week's forgotten franchise.
Now, a lot of the franchises that you've noted, there's some historical markers, you know, where the ballparks were or that sort of thing, and you detailed that in the past. It feels like that they're probably, it was such a forgotten franchise that there may not be a marker. Is there at Newell Park where that place was?
It's a great question. I don't know what the answer is. I need to do a road trip. You and I and Taylor, we're going to do a road trip to Olneyville in Providence. We'll go to Radom, Illinois. We'll go to the various places that we talked about with regard to Taylor's name. And we'll do a side trip to that home of so many baseball media folks, Syracuse, New York, to look for Newell Park.
Is your instinct the same as mine? That I just feel like that, I mean, if you get one line in the local newspaper, odds are there wasn't a big clamoring for, boy, we got to put up a statue.
Well, the Saber folks, you know, the Saber folks have been righting these wrongs for years, as you and I both know. And maybe there's something there. Who knows? But yeah, the one and out. That's why these franchises are forgotten. And some are more forgotten than others, Buster.
Well, and I'm sure that there'll be some listener who'll chime in and tell us whether there's something that marks Newell Park, maybe where home plate is there. All right, let's get to this week's quiz.
All right, I've got a Field of Dreams thing going on here. Right. So here is this week's question. Which one of these statements about shoeless Joe Jackson is not true? A, he never won a batting title as a major leaguer. B, he scored the first ever run at Detroit's Tiger Stadium. C, he wore uniform number 8 in honor of his native South Carolina, the 8th state to be admitted to the Union. D, he hit the only home run of the crooked 1919 World Series. One of these is false. Never won a batting title as a major leaguer, scored the first run at Tiger Stadium, wore uniform number 8 in honor of South Carolina, or hit the only home run of the crooked 1919 World Series.
I think I got this one, Taylor. I'm going to put pressure on you. What do you got?
Oh, I definitely don't have this one, but I'm going to go. He never actually wore number 8 for South Carolina.
Oh, dang it. That's what I was going to say. That's what I am saying, Todd. What say you?
You're both correct. Wow. It is true. Wow. A rare double barrel win. He never won a batting title as a major leaguer, despite having hit 408 in 1911 when Ty Cobb hit 420. He did hit the first ever home run or hit at Tiger Stadium. And yeah, he hit a home run in that crooked World Series. So there you have it. You guys are brilliant. Well done.
Well, look, if you're playing in the same era as Ty Cobb, you're not winning a lot of batting titles. It reminds me of this story recently. There was I'm just going to sort of dull it down and not give away who this was. In the last decade, I will say, a American League player got an incentive clause in his contract, and he was all fired up about it. And he contacted a friend. He goes, guess what? You know, if I win the MVP of the American League, then I get X number of dollars. And the response was, dude, you play in the same league as Mike Trout.
Well, Buster, I thought that a clause like that was included in my contract extension at ESPN.
Right. Yes. If you're the American League MVP, Todd, we give you a $10 million bonus.
I've got to start working out, boys. I don't know.
All right.
Thanks. Thank you.
Roberto Perez is an analyst for ESPN, of course, played for years in the big leagues. And Eduardo, I think that this year, one of the coolest things that I got to witness slash experience was we were doing a Zoom call. I can't remember the manager who we were talking with. It may have been Alex Cora. Was it Aaron? It was Aaron Boone that we were talking to. And, you know, you were in a room, as we all are, with the Zoom calls. And then you're like, hey, guess who's in the other room? And then you picked up your cell phone or your computer, and you walk in the other room, and there's your dad, Tony Perez, the Hall of Famer, with all these other baseball greats. Give me the background on that.
Well, they usually, and this is a really cool story, and I think this is where the brotherhood comes in a major way, the fraternity of baseball. So David Concepcion, who is like an uncle to me, a second father growing up, he was there at the house every Sunday. They tried to get together former players. It was Juan Marichal as well that was there, and they go from house to house. One week it could be Concepcion's, the next week it could be Marichal's, it could be Dennis Martinez's home. It just happened to be that it was my parents that were hosting what we call our extended family. And I think it's a necessary thing during this pandemic where they are all vaccinated, that they are all, you know, taking care of each other, and the families get together. So it just happened that on this Sunday, I was having lunch with the family, telling stories, and I'm like, now it's time to do the Zoom call. And you can see Booney And I was, and Marichal actually had asked me a question about why is Gleyber Torres not hitting the fastball? And I said, well, I'm just going to quote him and ask Boone the same thing. Why is Gleyber Torres not hitting the fastball? And I think it was Matty Vasgersian that was in the Zoom call. And he said, what a name dropper. I was like, well, I can back it up. And that's when we showed in the next room as they actually, it made their day as much as I think it brought a first smile that I've seen out of Boone at that time after having had some tough losses. I think he needed it. They ended up winning that game that night. So advantage Yankees because of the Marichal question, I would think.
Boy, I bet you all those baseball greats are like uncles for you, you know?
Yeah, they all are. And it's great because they get to ask me questions now about today's game. They get to ask me about the analytics. After that meeting, it was actually about, it was really cool. It was surreal. I wish it would have been taped. Because it was Marichal, they were talking about Marichal's last game, and Concepcion was bragging, hey, I got the hit, the last hit off Marichal, and I was one that knocked him off the mound, and nobody knows that. Walter Alston came in and took Marichal out of the game, and he said, I think it was the only hit that he allowed. But in that inning, my dad actually had taken Marichal deep also before Concepcion got the base hit, and neither Marichal or Concepcion remembered that. And then I looked to my right, and my dad has a big grin on his face like he was a kid again, saying, that's right, I did it. We went through Baseball Reference and the whole thing. It was really cool.
When I saw the news yesterday about the passing of J.R. Richard at age 71, I wanted to talk to you about him because I feel like he's one of the forgotten greats in history. Because of the fact that his career ended at age 30, after he had a stroke while going through a bullpen workout, that a lot of the folks, you know, who are baseball fans don't really know that much about him. He was an absolute monster of a pitcher. Yes. And I was going to run through some numbers, about that. He led the National League in ERA 2.71 in 1979. In 1980, the last year he played, he pitched 17 games that year. He had a 1.90 ERA. He clearly had put everything together. He led the league in strikeouts twice. Twice he finished in the top four for Cy Young Award in the National League. It felt like at the time that he suffered the stroke and his career ended, like he was on the verge of having one of the absolute dominant pitchers who was going to go on a run where he was going to win two or three Cy Young Awards. Well, tell me about what you remember about J.R. Richard.
My dad would tell me so much about him, and he was the one that was able to face him in the 70s. And it made everyone sick to their stomach every time J.R. Richard would take them out, because it was not only that he had a presence with the fastball and the slider, it was his greatness of being able to go out and whatever he started, he would finish. If you look at the numbers between 76 and 79, he went out there and he pretty much dominated. 14 complete games in 76, 13 in 77, 16 in 78, and then 19 in 79. Yes, it was a different game, but it was swing and miss stuff. And a lot of people, a lot of players weren't used to that height that he had, the 6'8 frame that he had, the release point where it was, and they just could not pick it up. I remember my dad telling me, we just couldn't dig in. And my old man would always say the nastiest pitcher he had ever faced was Gibson. But the nastiest at that moment in the late 70s, in the mid to late 70s, was J.R. Richards, without a doubt. And it's unfortunate we couldn't appreciate his career a little bit longer because of the circumstances. But it was great to be able to, as a kid, be able to watch him at Riverfront Stadium from the stands. And I think that perspective for me and watching an African-American man dominate on the mound at that time, when I could start remembering stuff, remember I was 8, 9, 10 years of age at that time, that I took that home with me. And that was a major accomplishment by J.R. Richards at that time. And then I was able to then meet him again and spend a lot of time with him when I coached with the Houston Astros organization. He would come into the clubhouse. He was that gentle giant, and just be able to speak with him and spend some time with him and Jose Cruz sitting down and talking baseball. I appreciate the 70s in a major way. It's what really, that's where I learned how to be able to win. I was around a lot of winning games, a lot of winning, a winning atmosphere as a kid, watching the Big Red Machine. And J.R. Richard was one guy that would control that offense in a major way when he took that mound with his presence.
Yeah, he was like a right-handed Randy Johnson. As you were talking about what your dad remembered about facing him and how difficult that was, I was thinking back to stories I heard, and I was a teenager at that time, about how veteran players would suddenly find a reason not to play that day. On the day that J.R. Richard pitched, it was the same thing with Randy Johnson years later. Left-handed hitters were like, you know what? Today's a good day for a day off. You're right. It's 6'8", 222 pounds. That was not something that you saw. All right. Where do we stand? U.S. Olympic baseball team moving forward.
Moving forward, it's one game, win it all, and it's win or lose. If you lose, you end up getting the silver. If you win, you get the gold medal, and you bring it back with pride, and it's going to be a tough one because you have to go out and face Team Japan, and it's a loaded squad that Japan has. But at the same time, Mike Socha has been able to keep his troops going. And, you know, I've been texting back and forth with Mike in Japan, and he's excited. He's like, there's nothing like this. I've managed the Angels. I've been played with the Dodgers in the postseason in the World Series. When you see USA on your chest, it is just different. Every pitch means a lot more. And from his viewpoint, from his standpoint, what he wants is to be able to get those 24 young men. And I say young, even though Scott Kazmir is on the team, even though you have so many young, so many veterans on the team, you want to be able to go out and lead them to a gold medal. And it's the same thing with Ernie Young, speaking with him, talking about the importance of being able to bring gold back to the United States. They haven't won it since the year 2000 when they won it in Sydney. It's a time to be able to execute and not play for oneself, but play for the team. And you look at the individuals and what they've been able to do. Bubba Starling hits the wall, goes down, comes out of the game, isn't able to play. Jack Lopez then takes over for him in center field and gets two big hits in yesterday's game. To be able to get ahead of Korea. What Todd Frazier has done leading this team, he is their emotional leader. You look at Tristan Casas, a young prospect from the left-hand side for the Boston Red Sox. I think his future is really bright, and I really do believe that he could make an impact for the Red Sox down the stretch. Are they willing to start his clock? Are they willing to be able to take on a young left-handed position player that right now looks to deserve that moment? Or are they wanting to start him next year? So many questions. But at the end of the day, Buster, it comes down to pitching. USA has pitched. They've had swings and misses. They've been able to control the tempo of every game except one inning when they lost to Japan in that last inning. But besides that, they have been dynamite. David Robertson anchors the back part of the staff with, and he could have if they had the lead, he could be the guy on the mound to be able to get the last out for Team USA. Scott Kazmir, I mentioned him earlier, the veteran guy on the mound. You got Ryan, who got traded. Stories that are happening because of the trade deadline here in the United States. And all of a sudden in Japan, they find out how they get traded. But everyone right now, it's not about their names. It's about what they have on their chest. And USA is a major part of this.
I'll be watching. I'll be up early in Chicago. Eduardo, I appreciate it.
You got it, Buster.
Buster, Eduardo, listeners, you guys know, if we're talking Olympics, obviously we're talking CarMax as well. This Olympic update is brought to you by CarMax. If it's time to sell your car, go for sold with an instant offer from CarMax. Find out what your car's worth with an instant offer at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way it should be.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher tweets for a beautiful Friday. First up, we have Debbie Gammons Brown. DGB writes in, "You really don't care who wins or loses the game, Buster? Do you, Taylor?"
No, I don't. I don't care. I truly, you hope for, as I always say, you hope for good things to happen to good people.
Okay. I do care who wins and loses. I always root against the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Nationals a lot as well. Nathan at GNilly97 writes, "And Buster, is Bryce Harper having the most under the radar great season in recent memory? If the Phillies win the NL East, could you see him as a dark horse MVP candidate?" The NL MVP candidate pool is open, so the water's nice. Come on in, Bryce Harper.
Yep. I'm glad that Carl talked about that is a possibility as we move forward.
Mm-hmm. Jared McInnes at Cupstradamus writes in, "Can you find a single sane reason why the Yankees demoted switch hitting, base stealing, run scoring Greg Allen, who's called up rejuvenated for the Yankees for career 180 hitter Jonathan Davis?"
I suspect that there's some sort of a matchup thing that they were trying to exploit there, but I will ask that question over the weekend when I talk to Yankees people.
We've got Jerry Van Blockland at RRA Jed 74. Jerry writes in, "Just watched Yadiel Hernandez get rung up for not checking his swing. I've been a baseball fan for 30 years now and still don't understand this rule. Can you please explain?"
No, because there's not really a hard and fast determination of whether someone checks his swing. I mean, every game you watch, there's always the question they ask the analyst, "So do you think he checked his swing?" And you can hear in the analyst's voice, people who played in the game for years, they don't know exactly what constitutes a check swing.
Last one for today, Coach Jake at Jacob Klossner. Coach Jake writes in, "What are the chances that Adamas wins NL MVP and Peralta wins NL Cy Young, especially with DeGrom out?"
No, I don't think it'll happen. Adamas, you know, essentially missed a couple months in the National League, and that's going to cost him. And we talked about how statistically Zach Wheeler looks like he has a big advantage in this race. I think Peralta's in the conversation, Woodruff's in the conversation, Buehler's in the conversation. But right now, I think Zach Wheeler is the guy.
Alrighty, that does it for Bleacher Tweets for the week. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
That's it for today. That's it for this week. My thanks to Carl, Todd, Eduardo, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something that we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.